Chapter 22. Elith's next view was much the same as the first, the envoy leaning over her. He was speaking not to her, but apparently about her. As her senses returned, she gradually became aware of her surroundings. The vibrant sounds and smells of the forest had vanished, replaced now with a sterile, almost antiseptic atmosphere. They'd taken her somewhere. The compound, maybe? Her body felt strange, all the weight of gravity misplaced. It took a moment for her to realize she was sitting, not lying down, and that her head was tilted back. She tried to sit up, but someone restrained her with a hand atop the crown of her head.
Not yet, the envoy said.
She felt something click into place around her neck, and then the envoy stepped back.
There we go, just in time.
The hand on her head released her, and Elith straightened up and glanced around. The room shifted and swirled, and a wave of nausea swept over her, enough to cause her to gag.
Side effect of the nerve agent, the envoy explained. It should pass within an hour or two.
Elith started to ask him where they'd brought her, but the instant her vocal cords started to engage, her throat and mouth seized up. It was a terrible sensation, not painful, but akin to drowning, and she surely would have cried out if the paralysis hadn't prevented it. The instant she stopped trying to speak, however, the sensation ceased, and she was once more able to breathe regularly.
Probably best just to keep quiet, said the envoy, tapping with his fingernail the front plate of the collar they'd affixed to her throat. I'm sure you understand.
She had no idea what the device was that they'd attached to her, but its purpose was obvious, to rob her of the power of speech. The envoy crouched in front of her, looked up into her eyes.
Elith Kyriel, he said, a true advocate of the voice, and here on Quell, no less. Deployed without authorization.
He clicked his tongue. The same condescending noise he'd made when last they'd met.
I apologize for my previous disregard. I didn't realize at the time what a treasure trove you were going to prove to be.
He patted her leg.
Don't worry, though. I know this is unpleasant, but it's a temporary arrangement. We can't have you wandering off. Wouldn't want such a prize obliterated along with the garbage, after all. You just sit here and try not to make trouble for anyone, and we'll get you home to the vault all in good time. Sound good?
Reflexively, Elith started to respond, only to be subjected to the sickening, forced clenching of her throat.
Sorry, that was meant to be a rhetorical question. I was just on my way out, but I'll see you again soon. In the meantime, perhaps you can sit and consider the harm you've brought upon the Ascendants, you and your house of grey witches, with your constant grasping, your incessant need to insert yourselves in every aspect of the hierarchy's operation. At least you'll have the privilege of watching it burn.
The envoy stood and patted her on the head before turning and starting toward the door. Wherever they were, it was apparent it had been some kind of official base of operations. Most of the workstations were clear now, but three Hezra officers were scrambling around, gathering the last vital components, evacuating.
Sir, an officer said, intercepting the envoy on his way out.
He had an armload of terminals and other assorted devices and was apparently trying to hand some of it off. But the envoy didn't stop walking as he waved him away, annoyed.
Just bring it all to the compound, he said. I have to go make sure our friend finishes his work before we leave.
A vital piece of information. She wasn't at the compound then, but she guessed Eth Amuin was. And from the envoy's words, it seemed they had no intention of taking Eth Amuin along with them.
What about her?
Another officer asked, jerking a thumb toward Elith.
What about her? Load her up with everything else. And don't dawdle. Activation is at 1700 hours, and this is not one you want to cut close.
Aye, sir, the officer said. The envoy disappeared from the room, but returned a few seconds later.
Do not, Under any circumstances, remove that, the envoy said, pointing to Elith and more specifically to the device clamped around her throat. After he'd said it, he looked around at the three officers sternly and then exited again. A few moments after he'd gone, one of the officers said, I wish we'd left him in that hole, and the other two chuckled. The officers resumed their work then, scurrying around the room and moving gear out. Elith took stock of her situation, bleak as it was. She was bound at the wrists, hands cuffed close together, and a chain ran from the center of her binders down beneath the chair. When she tugged on them, she could feel the attachment point underneath her, somewhere near the back of the chair. They'd left her some slack, but when she tried to reach up to touch the device at her throat, her hands didn't even make it a quarter of the way up. Even if she leaned forward and hunched down, there was no way she'd be able to get her hands on it. One of the officers walked over closer to her then, attracted, no doubt, by her gentle struggling against her bonds. He stopped several feet away. I'm sorry, Advocate, he said, and seemed sincere. As soon as we're off planet, I think we'll be able to make you more comfortable. He hovered for a moment as though, having acknowledged her, he was now unsure how to extract himself. Elith simply stared him down, making it clear that she needed neither his pity nor his comfort. After a moment, he withered under her gaze and returned to his work, careful not to make eye contact with her again. Elith sat for a time, still among the frenzied activity swirling around her. She had thought she had hit rock bottom before, that her mission had been a complete and utter failure. But she had survived now long enough to see just how much further down everything could still go. She didn't know precisely what the Hezra planned to do with her, but she had some clue from what the envoy had said to her. An advocate of the voice deployed without authorization, and to his words she added, captured by the Hezra in the company of a disciple of Varen Fedic. If their acquisition of some portion of the deep language hadn't been enough, her apprehension and the narrative they would craft around it would guarantee the fall of the First House and the Hezra's ascension to dominance before the Grand Council. If they were successful in spinning the destruction of Quell as a necessary act of mercy, in positioning themselves as saviors of the people, the Hezra Ka's reputation might even supersede that of the Council. Tears welled then, and Elith felt her throat clench with the coming emotion. And though she felt that grief was the only appropriate response for the moment, she did not wish to give the Hezra officers the pleasure of seeing her weep. She cleared her throat to chase the emotion away. And a moment later, she realized the significance. She cleared her throat again, allowed the vibration to linger in her throat in a sort of trailing hum, and she was able to do it. She then attempted to whisper, and immediately her throat seized. Once she ceased her attempt, though, the muscles relaxed once more. The device prevented her from speaking, but it did not stop her from humming. She thought then of Eth Amuin's demonstration, humming his tunes that evoked different responses in her, and then of his time singing over the broken branch of the frost oak. And she recalled, too, the second attempt she'd made to overpower him, when she'd stunned his vocal cords and he'd still managed to deflect her power away. She looked down at the cuffs that held her fast, wrists bound but hands free. Elith was no singer, but she knew the deep language intimately, could feel the jagged edge or polished surface, the willow lightness or stone weight of every syllable, and though she had never attempted anything of the sort before, in fact had been forbidden from doing so, none of that mattered now. Very little seemed to. But as long as she drew breath, she would not accept defeat. In her mind, she began to form a new expression. She focused on the act she'd seen Eth Amuin perform when he stomped his foot and dissolved the ground beneath it, drew up the memory of it and rolled it over, reimagining it again and again until the images were so vivid that they began to evoke the same response within her as the first time it had occurred. And from that response, she began to extract a description. She didn't need the earth to collapse, though.
She needed only a tiny fraction of that power, tightly focused. The deep language rose in her mind, her fluency in it making it easy to find a new, exact phrasing that, though she'd never heard it used, promised the result she was after. But now, instead of speaking it, she closed her eyes, held the phrase in her mind, and felt it. Felt the emotions it ignited, the images it conjured. She inhaled, and then she let her hands form the signs that seemed best to match what she felt, and along with it, she hummed a brief tune, in long, steady intervals. When she was done, she opened her eyes and found nothing had changed. She was still bound, still trapped. Her body felt no different. There'd been no release of power. The only difference was that one of the officers had stopped nearby and was staring at her. They locked eyes for a moment, and then the collar around her neck cracked and fell free. They both watched as it dropped and clattered to the floor, stared at it, and both came to the same realization at the same time. "Hey," the officer said, taking a step forward. Elith stood in a heartbeat, straddled the chair, and whipped her hands up, slinging the chair from between her legs and catching the officer with it full in the face. He cried out and crashed onto his back. Elith was on him in the next moment, her shin across his neck, pinning him to the ground. He flailed weakly but soon lapsed into unconsciousness. The other two officers rushed in and froze, just as their friend went limp beneath her. Elith held up her hands. "Unlock these," she said. One of the officers just stood there staring at her, but the one who had apologized to her earlier, fumbled around for a moment and then approached her like a man offering raw meat to a wolf. "Please don't," he said, but he didn't finish the sentence. As he deactivated the cuffs and they fell from her wrists, he skittered back two steps, and Elith realized the full power of the legends of the First House. These men were all young Hezra officers, not the hardened field operatives she'd encountered before. Judging by the fear in their eyes, they had no idea what she was truly capable of, and their imaginations were rapidly generating plenty of images. For all they knew, she might speak a single word and splatter them across the walls. "You," she said, pointing to the officer still frozen by the door. "Come here." He did as he was told. In a few moments, she had bound the two conscious officers together, one cuff on each, and looped the attached chain through the metal belt buckle of the third officer. He groaned and stirred as she secured the attachment point of the chain back to the cuffs, leaving the three in an uncomfortable but not unmanageable human knot. If they were clever enough, they'd be able to free themselves with a few minutes of work. But she had no intention of waiting around to see if they could pull it off. She scanned the room and saw her pack lying on a desk nearby. They'd been rifling through her things, though she'd either caught them early in the process or they'd stopped after a cursory look. She hurriedly shoved everything back into the pack, slung it over her shoulder, and headed for the door. Elith paused there before leaving and looked at the three officers tangled together. "Don't panic, and you'll figure it out," she said. "But if you follow me, or try to call for help, I'll tell the planet to swallow you." One of the officers went pale, the one who had made the comment about wishing they hadn't pulled the envoy out of the hole. She didn't mind letting him believe she'd been the one to do that. She stepped out of the room into a corridor and took quick, light steps toward the short staircase at the end. At the top, the door was open, and daylight streamed in. When she reached the top of the stairs, she paused and poked her head out to scan for trouble. They were in a secluded area, a relatively small clearing surrounded by trees. The smell and feel of the air reminded her strongly of Hawk's cabin. Back on the preserve, then. About 20 yards away sat a Hezra ship, similar to her old craft, the larger, the big brother to her former vessel, spaceflight capable, and, more importantly, authorized to pass through the blockade. There didn't appear to be anyone else around. She dug her override device out of her pack and made a dash for the craft. By the time she reached the front hatch, the device had already deactivated the security measures. The vessel was a 2-seat affair,
Once the hatch opened, she slung her gear into the co-pilot's seat and hopped in. She'd forgotten to close the top of her pack, and a number of her belongings tumbled out, but she paid no heed. The envoy had said activation was planned for 1700 hours. The ship console showed it was not quite 1300 hours by Hezra reckoning. Plenty of time. But she wasn't waiting around for those officers to test her on her promise. The familiar controls made it easy to prep the drives and prepare for launch. She knew the Hezra containment protocols. As long as she didn't make a headlong attempt to run the blockade, normal communications would be established. Her familiarity with the protocol, combined with the vessel's credentials, would be enough to allow her to pass through the line. Elith plotted a course that would take her on a high-altitude trajectory, looping through suborbital flight. The ship finished its initial ascent and lurched forward. And as the ship gained altitude, leaving the little clearing behind, the final reality sank in. She was escaping with her life intact and nothing else. She wondered how the Paragon would react to her return home, an abject failure having betrayed her oaths, Quell's destruction completed by the worst possible method, and First House diminished for having sent her at all. Would they even receive her? And she thought, too, of how far she had fallen in her own eyes. Once on Revic, in what seemed a lifetime ago, Elith had passed judgment on a woman for embracing a poisoned delusion, for confusing righteousness with vengeance, for envisioning herself as holy arbiter of right and wrong. She saw now that she had been no different. At least her escape would deprive the Hezra of whatever they had intended for her. Scapegoat or bargaining chip? That was one small victory, perhaps. The ship rocked backward, settling into its trajectory, and at last taking her away from that accursed planet. Elith started setting up the communication channels, waiting to receive the inevitable challenge, and had to lean over to the co-pilot's seat to activate one of the systems. As she did, she caught sight of the scattered belongings that had spilled out of her pack. There, perched on the edge of the co-pilot's seat, was the frost oak cutting she had taken from the Paragon's garden, dry, bent, partially broken. She picked up the little branch and sat back in her seat, contemplating it. So much had changed since the day she'd cut it. Everything. She'd come to Quell full of fire and purpose, and now she was leaving, broken, depleted, cut off from her source. Just like the branch. She ran her finger along the cutting, felt the splayed fibers where it had bent, hard and sharp now, with the loss of moisture, a dead reminder of what once had been. But then she noticed, there at one end, the tiniest swelling that hadn't been there before, the first sign, impossibly, of growth. She stared at that change. Momentarily frozen, unable to look away or to release the cutting. Her mind snapped then to Eth Amuin and the little song he had sung over it. All the things he had told her and warned her about and hoped for her. It couldn't be true. And yet, Elith dug her thumbnail into the branch, felt its softness, and when she drew her nail away, she saw the residue there, tender fibers. Sap. New life. A change, affected by Eth Amuin's song. He had made a point of demonstrating it, of performing in front of her very eyes, knowing that the effect would take time to manifest, planting the seed of a lesson he had hoped would blossom in her mind. And here now, finally, it did. The image of him bent over the branch burned brightly in her mind and conjured another, different and yet suddenly the same, the Paragon, speaking over her, guided by the true star. And in a flash, she recognized it now for what it was. No title of honor. No declaration of deep and abiding faith. It was a binding phrase, meant to drive her to her purpose and to her end. Now she saw what he had longed for her to see, that her will had not been wholly her own, that her true foundation had not run as deeply as she had imagined, and instead of forcing the realization upon her, he had waited patiently for her to discover it within herself, waited beyond the point of all hope, kept silent even in the despair of his apparent failure. And now, he was at the compound somewhere, undoubtedly bound and gagged as she had been, chained. Escaping with her life alone would mean nothing. Elith couldn't prevent the sundering of Quell, nor could she repair the damage to the Ascendants, but she could perhaps, here in her last few hours, break one last chain. Watcher greets the storm. However inconsequential her part, she would play it. Elith placed the cutting on the console and entered new coordinates. The ship responded, rolled in a wide bank, and began descending. She didn't have far to travel. A few minutes later, she hopped out of the craft and strode to the structure, Hawk's cabin. She knocked on the door, and when she got no response, walked around it, peering in the windows. From what she could see, all was dark. But when she circled back around, a man was standing there in a strider, staring at the ship. Kitu.
Elia, he said, startled when he saw her. What are you doing here?
Her response was simple. I need your help. Chapter 23. Elith, decked out in her infiltration gear, waited outside the perimeter, south of the compound. The main gates were unmanned, and several officers were scrambling around in the open. Much of the facility had already been evacuated, but those who remained behind were of the worst possible sort. A contingent of soldiers from 3 Recon was stationed on the premises, keeping careful watch, while others hurried to load the 3 remaining ships on the grounds. She'd seen no sign of Eth Amuin or the envoy, but she intuited that they were both still there, somewhere. Her hope had been to slip into the compound undetected and then have Hawk's crew cause a distraction long enough for her to escape with Eth Amuin. 2 strider frames lay concealed farther down the slope, on the eastern side of the compound, and the Hezra ship she'd stolen lay concealed in a gully, even farther down the mountain, their final escape vessel. But knowing how active the compound was likely to be, she hadn't counted solely on her ability to sneak in. They had a backup plan, if it should prove necessary. Unfortunately, it was looking necessary. For their part, Hawk and Kitu had heard nothing about the blockade, but they had believed the urgency of her need, and though she hadn't told them everything, she had told them enough. They'd been ready and willing to do whatever they could to help free Eth Amuin, as had a few of the friends they'd been able to gather. One of the Hezra vessels lifted off just before 1600 hours, and the activity around the compound lessened. But the alertness of the troopers only increased. From what she could tell, all that remained within the perimeter was the soldiers of 3 Recon, the envoy, and Eth Amuin. The final rear guard waiting until the last possible moment to guarantee that Eth Amuin didn't escape. They were going to have to go with the backup plan. She opened a channel with Hawk. Hawk, she said, plan B.
Yeah, he said, I figured. You guys all set? All set. Don't be brave, she said. Not planning on it.
She waited for the signal. After 2 minutes had passed, she started to get worried that maybe something had gone wrong. But shortly after, it kicked off. It began with a low-pitched hum, coming from high on the ridge northwest of the compound. A few of the soldiers glanced in its direction, but at first no one reacted with any sort of concern. As the sound grew into a buzzing growl, though, others began to turn to face it, searching for its source. They didn't have to wait long. A dark streak exploded from the trees, followed closely by a second. Hawk's hunting drones pushed to their maximum limit of speed. One trooper managed to get his rifle shouldered, but before he could fire, both drones angled sharply downward, aimed for the fences. They plowed through the outermost, rending a gaping hole through it before impacting the second. Both erupted,
sending a shotgun blast of fire and debris through the innermost fence. The guards moved quickly to cover the area, and while they were still in motion, a great commotion arose from the woods as though some herd of massive beasts were charging through. That proved not to be too far from the truth. Four striders burst from the tree line, racing flat out toward the western fence. The soldiers of 3 Recon reacted immediately, almost as quickly as if they'd been expecting it. They responded with controlled fire as they moved to cover, hammering the rapidly approaching frames with disciplined shots. Some of the troopers advanced to intercept the threat, while others collapsed back toward one of the buildings on the northwestern corner of the compound, the building where Eth Amuin must have been. Like the drones before them, the striders smashed through the outer fence and into the middle one. Two became entangled there, but two others made it all the way to the innermost fence before the damage inflicted by the fences and the gunfire brought them down. Elith had known about the drones, but hadn't expected the striders, and she couldn't help but wonder which of Eth Amuin's followers had just so recklessly given their lives to rescue him. One of the frames twitched sporadically, suspended and twisted helplessly in the ruins of the fence, its arms splayed out like a hide drying in the sun. And she saw that it was empty. They'd tethered the frames to someone else on the opposite side of the compound. But Elith didn't have time to appreciate the ingenuity. Gunfire erupted from the tree line all at once, perpendicular to her line of sight to the compound, Hawk and his friends assaulting from the west. The echoing roar ripped across the compound and then fell silent as suddenly as it had begun. Moments later, more shots came in from farther north than the initial volley. From her vantage, Elith could see the rounds pinging off buildings and kicking up dirt. Not a single one found its way to a human. The goal was to draw as many of them out as possible. She just hoped that none of the soldiers under fire could tell that Hawk and his people weren't actually trying to kill them. At least, not yet. A third set of gunshots started up from closer to Elith's position, and the soldiers of 3 Recon scrambled to adjust. It was starting to appear that the whole upper portion of the mountain was full of assailants. But Elith knew it was only a handful of people that Hawk and his friends had been able to pull together. Though she couldn't see them, she could nevertheless picture them dashing like hounds through the forest in their striders, moving from position to position, pausing only long enough to fire a few harmless rounds before continuing on again. All Elith needed now was for the soldiers of 3 Recon to live up to their name. They were not the sort to sit and allow themselves to be shot at for long. And sure enough, once they'd gotten themselves positioned and organized, 3 Recon began their counterattack. This was the most terrifying part for Elith, the soldiers' initial rush into their attackers. Hawk and his people might not have been trying to kill anyone, but they could expect no such courtesy from the hardened veterans of 3 Recon. The Fear Eaters unleashed a coordinated volley and pushed out from the compound, assaulting uphill to meet their attackers head-on. Elith could only hope that Hawk and his friends could respond quickly enough and fall back before they suffered any casualties. She didn't have time to wait and see, though. She launched from her hiding place then and closed the distance to the nearest unguarded gate. The troopers were no fools, of course. They hadn't left the place completely unsecured, and Elith had to weave among the many structures of the compound to avoid moving through open areas. She dodged from point to point, sporadic incoming rounds continuing to ping and snap around her. But as she moved farther into the compound, the sounds of combat moved farther west, higher up on the mountain, as her time grew ever shorter. The soldiers might hold position outside the compound for a time, until they were confident they had repelled the assault, but they would collapse back soon enough. If Elith didn't have Eth Amuin safely out before they returned, they weren't likely to get out at all. The building that the remaining soldiers were guarding was another two-story structure, similar to Eth Amuin's residence, though somewhat larger, and constructed next to a second, lower building. As she closed in, Elith saw that two guards had been posted at each of the two entrances to the structure, and both pairs were holding their positions.
Though their attention was still focused on the conflict outside the perimeter, there didn't seem to be any good approach to either entrance where they wouldn't see her coming. Even at her peak, taking on 2 troopers from 3 Recon would have been a tall order, and she was far from top form. A long balcony ran along the 2nd floor. Her best chance was to bypass the guards from the roof of the neighboring building. Elith circled around and clambered up the backside of the lower building and crept to the front edge. The distance was right at the limit of what she could do without a running start, maybe a little farther. But she didn't have time to evaluate it more. She heard the whine and roar of one of the ships in the compound. A few moments later, it lifted off and passed low, headed in the same direction that the soldiers had gone. The 2 guards looked up to watch it go, drawing their attention away from her perch. Elith took that moment to make the leap. She launched across the gap, stepping lightly on the rail of the balcony to slow her descent, rolled when she landed. She remained still, crouched low, hoping that the noise from the low-flying craft had masked the sound, and listening. Down below, the guards spoke.
"Whoever they are, they're in for it now," one of the soldiers said.
"Can't blame 'em, really," the other one answered. "I'd rather go out fighting, too."
"You think they know what's coming?"
"Got to assume so. Probably trying to get to our ships. Well, I guess it worked then. Now one's going to 'em."
The door to the balcony was locked. Elith verified there was no one on the other side of it, and then made short work of the lock and slipped in. Once inside, she had an uncanny feeling of familiarity. After a moment, she realized that the floor plan of the structure was almost identical to Eth Amuin's, only larger. From somewhere down below, she could hear the muted tones of a deep voice. Elith took her stun baton from her belt and silently deployed it with a flick of her wrist. She crept through the upper hall, listening, scanning, straining her senses, weapon at the ready. The only sound inside the building was the voice. But that didn't mean one of the stone soldiers of 3 Recon wasn't standing post around the next corner, or the next. But as she prowled silently through the structure and down the stairs to the 1st floor, she gained confidence with each step that whoever might be in the building, and whatever number of them, she would find them all in the room with the speaker. She came upon another set of stairs, leading down yet again. 1/3 floor, beneath the surface. Elith followed those 2 toward the growing sound of the voice, and as she reached the bottom of the staircase, she could hear enough to recognize the speaker. It was the envoy, his unmistakable baritone with its edge of superiority. There was a room at the end of the hall, farthest from the stairwell. Its door was partially open, and the envoy's words emanated from within it. Elith stole down the corridor toward that voice.
"Just kept your end of the bargain, none of this would have happened," he was saying. "But it is as it is. I don't hold it against you, I suppose, but the consequences, I'm afraid, can't be avoided. We are a people of our word, after all."
Elith crouched low outside the door and peeked into the room. The envoy was there, standing over Eth Amuin, who was lying on his back on the floor. They were the only 2 in the room. Elith stood then, removed the mask from her infiltration suit, and pushed the door open with the tip of her baton. The envoy turned at the motion, clearly expecting it to be one of his men reporting in. She left just enough time for his eyes to go wide with recognition, and then, with the baton, crumpled him to the floor. He fell heavily in a jumbled heap, like a marionette whose strings had been cut, next to Eth Amuin. His head made a dull thunking sound when it hit the ground, one that would have been distressing had Elith not had such disdain for the man. There was no time to stand over him and gloat. Eth Amuin looked up at her with wide eyes, part shock, part alarm. Was there any joy there? The treatment they'd given her was mild compared to what they'd subjected him to. A device, similar to the collar they'd fitted her with, was around his neck, but his had a secondary plate that cupped his lower jaw and covered his mouth. And she saw why he yet remained lying on the floor, even now that the envoy had been handled. They'd wrapped thin chains around his arms, chest, and legs, and then anchored them taut to the floor. His hands were pinned flat against his sides. This she hadn't anticipated.
Bound, yes, chained to the floor. No, they really hadn't been taking any chances.
On a whim, she searched the unconscious body of the envoy, hoping to find some key, but found nothing useful on him. She crouched by Eth Amuin then, and lifted his head, searched the device for its release mechanism. It took a few moments, but once she unclasped the upper portion, the rest of it came free.
I thought you were dead, Eth Amuin said.
Might still be right, she answered. How do we get you out of here? He shook his head.
You'll have to do it, he answered.
Elith felt like she'd been hearing that a lot lately. There was no tool she could find, no protocol she could think of for such a situation. Despite having freed herself with an improvised technique, she wasn't confident she could do it again. Had it been pure luck? Or had the rest of the effect merely not yet manifested? I hope I don't kill you, she said.
Ah, at last, a kind word. Don't worry, I trust you.
Then you're still a fool. Elith inhaled, focused on the anchor next to his head.
Maybe try the one by my feet, though, he offered.
She scowled at him, but shifted her concentration to one of the other anchors and reset herself. An image formed in her mind, a phrase bubbled up almost unbidden, and without considering it further, she spoke. A parched desert, brittle earth, beaten by the sun. A tiny jolt passed through her, warm and radiant, like the sun she'd imagined. But the anchor didn't split as she had intended. Instead, the concrete beneath it did, with a little pop that sent dust and shards spitting into the air. Close enough.
That wasn't part of me, was it? Eth Amuin asked.
But Elith didn't reply. She was too busy working the chain free and starting to unwind it. As she did, Hawk came through the comms channel.
Elia, you out? Still working, she answered. You gotta go, girl. They're headed back your way.
Copy. The moment she got some slack into the chains, Eth Amuin started wriggling around, sloughing off the coils as quickly as he could. He was smiling, almost giddy with excitement, like this was all some big game.
Who are you talking to? He asked.
Hawk?
Hawk's out there? How wonderful.
I don't think you understand what's going on, Elith said. We're still much more likely to die than we are to make it out of here.
That's okay, he said brightly. This is already way better than what I'd been expecting.
Soon enough, they had him free. All that remained was to escape the perimeter while it was crawling with the most seasoned warriors the Hezra had in service, and to reach the gully where they'd concealed the ship, before they ran out of time and the entire world disintegrated under their feet.
You were right, Eth Amuin said. They're activating the contingency.
Why do you think I'm here?
I figured it was to punch that guy, he said, pointing to the envoy.
Elith quickly explained the rest of the situation and the plan of escape.
That's a terrible plan, Eth Amuin said.
I didn't have a lot of time to prepare it. This is your territory. What's the best way to get out?
Oh, you know me, he said. I've always preferred the front door.
Guarded. You're sure you don't have some secret tunnels in here or something?
If I do, they're too secret for me to know about. Let's go see how guarded.
Before she could stop him, he was on his way up the stairs. Elith followed him up, half concerned, half impressed with how awake and alive he was in the chaos of the circumstances. Chaos seemed to suit him. She was glad to see, however, that as he approached the front entrance, he slowed and became more cautious. There was a window several feet to one side. He slipped to the floor underneath it, and then raised his head just enough to get a look out. He nodded to himself, and then slid back over to where she was. Outside, the gunfire had ceased. How long it would take for the other troops to return, Elith didn't know. But maybe those who had stayed behind would be beginning to relax. Eth Amuin stepped close to her and whispered.
Just two sentries. We make a short run straight, then behind the building directly across from us. We should have enough cover to make it to the east gate.
And what's past the gate?
A little shallow bluff, gentle slope, we can slide down it.
How far?
To the bottom. Come on.
He took her by the arm and pulled her a few steps back from the front door.
What are you doing?
She asked. I'm going to open it, he said. When I do, run.
What do you mean you're going to open it?
He answered by doing it. He called out in three successive rising tones and then clapped his hands together. And the sound of his hands striking together was a thunderclap. The entire front of the building evaporated in the blast. He was off an instant later, charging through the gaping hole, neither waiting nor looking behind him for Elith. It took her only a second to recover from the shock, and then she was chasing after him, running flat out past the guards who lay sprawled and dazed. As she crossed the open ground to the building ahead, Elith expected with each step to be struck by fire from behind. But she made it. Dashed around behind the structure, Eth Amuin was already at the far corner, half crouched.
What are you waiting for? She called as she caught up.
He answered, waving his hand vaguely in front of him. Elith drew up behind him, peeked over top around the corner. Too late. The first of the three recon soldiers had returned and were swiftly fanning out. Some advanced through the compound. Others moved to encircle it. Eth Amuin's dramatic exit had alerted them that their work wasn't done. Elith snapped her stun baton open.
Follow me, she said.
Anywhere, he answered. They maneuvered from structure to structure, slinking, darting, a pair of foxes amid a pack of hounds. Every minute they spent moving from the interior toward the exterior, more soldiers filtered in, seemingly from every angle. But somehow, Elith led them safely through. When they reached the last line of buildings, they paused to evaluate the final stretch. Three small outbuildings ran along the eastern side of the compound. Beyond those buildings, though, lay no cover. 30 yards of open ground led to the gate. Farther down, the wide landing zone ran for 50 yards, with only one remaining Hezra ship breaking up their line of sight. They were going to have to make a run for it.
Home stretch, Elith said. You ready?
Let's do it, Eth Amuin said.
They crept along the first building, reached the second, and just as they were crossing to the third, soldiers rounded the opposite corner. Three of them.
The lead soldier snapped her weapon to her shoulder, taking a bead on Eth Amuin. Elith reacted. She dove forward, rolled, came up under the barrel of the rifle, slapped it skyward just as it fired. With a palm strike, she snapped the soldier's head back, and in the next instant, hooked her and threw her into the man on her right. As the two collapsed together, the third trooper tried to backpedal as he raised his rifle. Elith whipped around and launched her baton. It caught him full in the face, plunging him backward to the ground. Elith turned back to the tangled pair just as the woman was beginning to gain her feet, rifle in hand. Elith snatched the weapon and delivered a knee to the side of the trooper's head, dropping her once more, unconscious. The other soldier was still on his back, scrambling to recover his rifle. Elith brought the butt of his partner's weapon crashing down on the bridge of his nose, and only she remained. She turned to look at Eth Amuin behind her. He just stood, staring, mouth open.
You okay?
She asked.
He looked at the soldiers around her feet.
Grief, she called. Are you hit?
His eyes came back up to hers.
I had no idea, he said.
Well, get one, she answered. We're in trouble.
Elith tossed the rifle. She wasn't about to try to outshoot three recon, but she recovered her baton, took cover by the corner of the building, quickly peeked out and back. As she expected, across the compound, troopers were reacting to the single shot and moving toward them. And in her brief glimpse, she saw others securing the landing pad, cutting them off from the remaining ship. The gate was too far away. But if the soldiers thought they wanted the ship, Elith looked to the fence behind the building, the closest point, about 20 yards away.
What do you want me to do? Eth Amuin asked.
anything to keep them from getting to us while I get us through the fence.
Okay, he said.
Elith risked another quick peek. A line of troops advanced cautiously, weapons up. And as she ducked back into cover, a shot fired. The round bit a chunk out of the corner of the building where her head had been a moment before. 3 Recon wasn't interested in capture this time. Eth Amuin stepped back from the building a few steps, head raised, palms up, as though feeling the first drops of rain. Elith turned her focus toward the fence, pictured the 3 barriers, began forming a concept in her mind, the image of a massive boulder bulldozing through. Behind her, Eth Amuin raised his voice. Within moments, it took on an unearthly quality, like the sound of rushing water, but composed of many voices. And then Elith realized she was hearing a roaring coming from above as though a ship were plummeting to the earth. Concentration broken, words lost, she looked up. But there was nothing, nothing but the terrible howl in the clear sky. And then it struck. A microburst or a fist from heaven smashed into the ground and radiated outward, throwing the soldiers back and scouring the compound. The building shielded the 2 of them, but the force of the wind ripped a portion of the roof off and threw it toward the fence. Elith didn't think. She just spoke.
Kingfisher pierces the water.
The debris compressed and accelerated, and its natural tumble became a straight-line trajectory that tore through the fences. They took off together then, Eth Amuin ahead of her as they raced across the open ground, through the shredded barricades, sprinting for the bluff. She caught up to him just as he reached the edge. They leapt together. And Elith realized that the bluff was neither little nor shallow. It wasn't quite a cliff, but had she not been blindly following Eth Amuin, she would never have launched herself out over it. She twisted, threw her weight back to align with the slope, and impacted 12 or 15 feet down. In the next moment, she was half sliding, half tumbling down the bluff, everything streaking past her, and her only thought was to try and get some sort of control so she didn't break her neck when she hit the ground. And then, a few seconds later, she was plunging through the brush and brambles, some 60 feet below. She managed to get her feet around in front of her just before impact, rolled with it, and was up in an instant. Eth Amuin crashed heavily behind her a moment later and lay still.
That slope is not gentle, she called.
He stirred, got up on his hands and knees.
Come on, we've got to keep moving, she said.
He managed to get to his feet, but stayed doubled over, shaking. She'd seen how much it had taken out of him when he'd caused the earth to collapse. She wondered how badly it had hurt him to do whatever it was he had just done.
Grief. Can you move?
He looked up at her then, grinning, and she realized he was laughing silently. She almost punched him.
I wonder if we're facing Alaness right now, he said.
She couldn't make sense of the comment, though his expression showed he clearly expected her to.
You know, cargo, momentum, all that. You threatened to throw me off a cliff once, remember?
Your timing needs work, she said. We've still got ground to cover. Eth Amuin looked up the steep bank.
I don't think they'll follow us.
Maybe not that way. Come on. Elith led him off at a jog then, getting her bearings on the move. Soon enough, she figured out where they were in relation to the hidden striders and found her way to the frames. They had just finished strapping in when she heard the low growl of a ship closing in.
Move,
she barked, and she was off, charging down the slope, hoping they could reach their own ship before they were spotted. The trees thinned out, and Elith knew if the Hezra vessel caught sight of them, they'd be easy targets. Eth Amuin kept pace with her, the engine noise of the ship like a rock slide following them down the mountain. From the oscillating sound of the vessel, she could tell the pilot was making fast, sweeping arcs, crisscrossing their general trail, searching. A quarter mile from the gully, they still hadn't seen it yet. But the peak of the sound kept growing louder with each pass. The ship was gaining on them. Elith knew if they could just reach the cover of the gully, They could lie low until the ship had passed by. But she had to divert their course to skirt around a clearing, and those few minutes proved more precious than she could have known. Just as the smooth ridge of the gully appeared ahead of them, so did the vessel. It streaked in from their right, passing just above the tree line, and continued past. Elith skidded to a halt, dodged to the nearest tree, and motioned for Eth Amuin to do the same. They hardly had any cover. If the ship wheeled back around, there wasn't anything she'd be able to do about it.
"Grief," she said. "If it turns, bring it down."
He nodded. The ship leveled off, held a line, moving away from them, pitched slightly upward to gain altitude, headed back to the compound, it seemed. She hoped. But then two bright puffs appeared on either side of the vessel, and Elith understood.
Rockets. She saw them tumble away from the ship before they sparked, stabilized, and streaked toward them.
Elith knew the power of those weapons, knew they could not outrun them or survive their blast. And in the final second before their impact, the moment of her death, so close to escape, raw emotion erupted in a cry of her soul, and with it, the earth of Quell rose up before her like a great wave. The explosion disintegrated the earthen wall. Elith catapulted and somersaulted in the rush of heat and noise and debris. Dazed, deafened, she swam her arms, tried to make sense of the world. She was on her back, staring up at the sky where the ship was. She raised her head, saw the ship slowing, banking, turning back, making another pass. Elith was too disoriented, too detached. She wouldn't be able to stop it this time. It fired again, but this time its rockets went off course, passed over, and impacted harmlessly down in the gully. In the roar of the explosion, Elith realized a voice had been calling out, "Eth Amuin." The ship banked again. But no, not banking. Part of it was falling away, sheared through the middle in a jagged line. For the briefest of moments, Elith could see the interior of the cockpit just before it became a fireball in the sky. Carefully, she sat up and found that she couldn't move her legs, even with the power of the strider frame. It took a few seconds for her to realize it was the frame, not her, that had been damaged. She unbuckled herself, slid out of the harness. Eth Amuin sat on his knees, already out of his strider, about 15 feet away. A quick scan made it obvious why he was out of the frame. It lay behind him, vomiting black smoke and sparking with dull flame. Wordlessly, she helped him to his feet, and together they crossed the remaining stretch of ground to the gully. And when they crested the ridge, Elith realized that the rockets she thought were errant had in fact found their target, their concealed ship. Now only cratered earth and twisted burning debris remained where their means of escape had been moments before. There would be no escape for them now.